I've just opened my phone and my Facebook to see an ad for the first ChatGPT enabled glasses. I don't even know what you do with.
That these aren't ordinary glasses. These are Lucid smart glasses designed for the modern lifestyle. If you're constantly on the move like I am, you'll
What?
find these glasses to be a game changer. Whether it's commuting to
Game
school,
changer.
going for a run, or just navigating the daily life, Lucid has it covered. I hardly ever take them off for good reason.
Dude's just skipping, like he's literally skipping. Why do you need smart glasses to be skipping? I don't know. You can sell anything with AI today. Let me tweet the thing about me being live down there. Beautiful. G'day, James. Welcome. Good morning. It is morning here in Australia. 8 a.m. Friday morning, tomorrow for many of you in different parts of the world. Loads and loads and loads of stuff going on this week. I wrote it all down somewhere. Where'd it go? It's on one of these windows. Speaking of all the rubbish that you can do with ChatGPT, or the rubbish you can try and sell with ChatGPT, I was just using ChatGPT to ask a very specific coding question. And this is where I'm finding the value proposition is. It's like there is something very specific I needed to do. I had a SQL data reader, I had a null column, I was trying to figure out whether it was null or not. How do I check SQL data reader for system.db null or whatever it is? ChatGPT, bam, immediate answer. I could have Googled it. Probably would have seen an ad for ChatGPT enabled glasses, so maybe that wouldn't have been what I wanted. Anyway, moving on. Where are we? Lots of stuff happening today. Let's kick off where we usually do with the sponsor. Got everyone joining. George, South Africa. Wow, okay. That's cool. I gotta go to South Africa. I've not been. In fact, the only place in Africa I've been is Kenya, and that was more than 30 years ago. I was young. So I gotta do a trip to Africa. Now, yes, sponsor. In fact, I've got some stuff to show, sponsor related, totally unscripted, in all honesty. Sponsored by CrowdSec. Need centralized and real-time visibility into threat detection and mitigation? We got you. Discover the CrowdSec console today. Now, CrowdSec has been a sponsor on many occasions in the past. I've spent time in person with one of the CrowdSec folks in Copenhagen, actually, nearly a year ago now. Gee, that time flew quickly. CrowdSec console, real-time visibility and threat mitigation and detection, a centralized dashboard providing insights into all your security events, gaining real-time macro overview of your exposed workloads with visibility into threat detection, mitigation, IP reputation, and detailed analytics. Now, that is all great. What is also great from CrowdSec is that when I did spend some time with them, I got some stickers, and I didn't deliberately line all this up with the sponsorship and the stickers and everything. But when I was about to besticker my laptop, my new laptop, which we'll get to in a moment, I poured all the stickers out on the floor. I shared a tweet of this earlier in the week. It's a lot of stickers. And some of the ones that were the best, and I went through this with Elle, my 11-year-old daughter, and she is a sticker aficionado. Some of the ones that were the best were the CrowdSec stickers. So the one here, I'm going to read it off the screen. Hacker found my password, need to rename my dog. How true is that? So good on them for that. The other one I really liked, and I'm going to pronounce this as it's written. If you F star CK with one of us, the crowd will F star CK you up, which seems like a very reasonable proposition. A lot of llama going on here as well. Now, I did discuss at the time with them, I think it is llamas and not alpacas. I know one of them is bigger than the other and one spits more than the other. They're cool. They're fluffy. Thank you to CrowdSec for sponsoring this week's blog and show and everything else. Lance is here from gloomy Sydney. Oh, wow. Okay. I'll tell you what, mate. It's not gloomy here. It is beautiful sunshine here today. No problems at all on the Gold Coast. James says, ChatGPT won't call you a noob for asking a question at least. That's a very good point. I feel like I can be more myself with ChatGPT because I won't get judged for a stupid question. And the thing is, like, I can go and find these answers, and I can probably work it out by IntelliSensing and auto-completing and everything. And yes, I need to spend more time with Copilot and the likes as well. But yeah, it's like I keep remembering lately. It's, I'm trying to write something. It's like, hang on a second. I had to write a curl command with a couple of specific parameters the other day. I was like, oh, I could just ChatGPT that. So some stuff is actually doing really well. Now, let me get on to the cool bits. Lenovo. So, it actually takes some effort to lift it. This is the new Lenovo machine. And I'm going to, on this podcast show, whatever we call it now. Now, I do give more candid feedback than what I generally put online because you get emotion, sentiment, and everything with it. And I want to give you a little bit of context here because there was a time when Lenovo used to send a lot of machines for free, which is nice, right? Like, we all like swag. So they have a program called Lenovo Insiders. And just for by way of background, I've been buying or being given ThinkPads since somewhere in the 90s is how far back that goes, when they were IBM, before Lenovo acquired them. And I've always loved the ThinkPads. They are not sexy machines. Even this morning, Charlotte was lamenting how much nicer looking her MacBook was before I got her a decent laptop. They're not sexy machines, but they are very robust. They're very resilient. They last for eons and eons. They've got a fantastic keyboard as well. And in fact, over here, I have my my outgoing laptop, which is my my P50. Now, I've been, as I said, buying these and being given them for a very long time. When I was at Pfizer, it was ThinkPads all the way. So we'd always given ThinkPads, which was great. And because I used them a lot and shared them a lot, I think somewhere circa, 2016, Lenovo invited me into this program where they would then seed laptops to people who are in this insiders group. And obviously this was people who had some degree of influence, and it's effectively free marketing for them. I imagine the hardware costs of these devices are stuff all. So to give machines away to influencers, for want of a better time, I'm air quoting that for people listening later on, was an absolute no-brainer. Richard's here. G'day, Richard. And that was fine. And over the course of time, they'd send a bunch of machines. Sometimes, and I'd tweet all these, sometimes there'd be a box of several machines arrive, and it was fantastic. And I'd use them in different capacities, and I'd share what I was doing. And the expectation that I always set with Lenovo is, I said, I'm not going to artificially create use cases or things which are not organic and share that. It's going to be the way I use it. And I'll share pictures of that, and there's going to be a lot of photos of my feet by the pool with a laptop because this is what I do. I was sitting on the boat the other day with the laptop for hours, the new one, and that was fantastic. Scott's here. He's an influencer as well, apparently. McBlazington, T14s were almost unbreakable. I'm sure I had multiple T14s at Pfizer. So at some point along the way, I think I bought a W540. From my own hard-earned cash. This would have been about a decade ago. And it was a great machine. It lasted really well. Got into this program with Lenovo, and they start sending machines, of which one is the P50, which is still besticked here. There's a report URI in there for you there. Look at that, Scott. Massive one right under Cloudflare there. So that was great. They sent this machine, and I think this was a 2017-era machine. I know it's somewhere in my tweet history there. And it lasted fantastically. It is, again, like, this is not a sexy machine, right? But it is robust. So that was great. At some point in time, they sent a P1, which is like a thinner version of that. And I ran the P1 for a couple of years, and eventually it cooked itself. That's the technical term for the damn thing just didn't work anymore. I end up taking it down to a local Lenovo specialist, and they went, look, you've literally fried, I think it was fried the GPU. There's just no coming back from this. So that ended up going into the e-waste bin. And I actually rolled back to the P50. And the main issue I had with that was that the P50 doesn't support TPM2, so I can't run Windows 11, so it's been running Windows 10. I can live with that. But then the battery started degrading more and more to the point where I might get less than an hour battery time, which is really hard to then go to the beach and work. First world problems. So that became a bit of an issue. Now, somewhere along the way, I gave this Lenovo Insiders intro. People there changed, processes changed, and I feel like I'm going to put this in a blog post at some point because it does bug me. But it sort of got to the point where they wanted very specific content shared that in one particular case, which was sort of about the final straw for me, that they would review and approve. And I was just like, nope, not going to happen. Definitely not going to happen. So they have not sent me any machines for quite some time because I don't want to play that game. So I'm going to, like, I do think I'm actually going to write that up one day, because I just, what bugs me about it is that if they're going to give machines to people that are then loaners for promotional periods that they review material on that you write and then correct you if you say things that they don't like, can you trust the people that are writing? You see where I'm going? This is like a slippery slope. So I think I'm going to write that up one time. And I just want to sort of give them the opportunity. It's like, are you sure you really only want to do the thing where you review stuff and it's, you have to get points by posting social things? Like, yeah, anyway, I just have a massive, massive issue with that. And I would rather spend my own hard-earned cash on buying machines like this. This is heavy. So first thing is, this is paid for by myself, full retail with the discount. I'll get back to it in a moment. What have I got here? Let me find the specs, because it's all in the Twitters. First of all, possibly use case. And then I want to talk about some of the feedback that came back, because people said some interesting things on the Twitters and people said some pretty stupid things. I know, on Twitter, right? So here we are. Let me find the images here. So my profile, it'll be on the photos here. This is a machine that, because now again, I travel a lot, and I think if we add it all up, probably these days I'm traveling up to 100 days a year maybe, and I want to have all of the power and everything I'd normally have when I'm sitting here on my desktop. So I have a Lenovo P720 desktop that drives everything here around the last few years. Incidentally, all of these machines run pretty much 24/7 as well. So for this P50 to be like 6 or 7 years on, even though there's a few things obviously I'm a bit unhappy about with Lenovo, that is a really good machine. Like, to last that long and to go all the way around the world gazillions of times and run 24/7, and now the battery is having a few little issues, like, this is a rock solid machine. So I wanted something pretty high end that I could do as much stuff with as possible. And I've sort of got this little mental model I can't properly enumerate or quantify, which is that all of those tiny little time savings and efficiency savings that you get over the course of years by having a machine that's high end and fast and a big screen and all the rest of it, it adds up to something. And you don't have to make a lot of difference, particularly when you're independent and your time is literally your money, for that to be a good ROI. All right, so I wanted a high-end machine. Now, I wanted a P-Series. I spoke to a few folks on the Lenovo Insiders group. Went, okay, what should I do here? Now, incidentally, that P50 is 7 years old, more than 7 years old. So that's done well. So I'd ended up deciding to find something pretty high-end, which worked out to be the P16 Gen 2. So that's what we're looking at here, is the P16 Gen 2. These are a chunky unit. And because they're a chunky unit, or maybe they're a chunky unit because they've got things like a lot of ports. So we've got a USB-A just here. We've got an SD card slot there. On the back, we've got, obviously, power, two USB-C, full HDMI. And then on the other side, we've got another USB-A, one of those like weird proprietary Lenovo ones, not sure what that does, and a 3.5mm audio jack. And power, obviously. So that's got a lot of stuff built into it. Which is great, because when I need to, you know, travel and plug in all your peripherals and things like that, there are ports for everything and I don't run short. The keyboard is like a proper full-size keyboard, has numeric keyboard as well, or keypad, which I probably didn't really need. So for those of you looking, that's what it looks like. Ooh, near my head so it doesn't get out of focus. So that's really neat. The power button up here on the top right is also a fingerprint reader. So it'll do fingerprint reader there. And you can possibly just see the light flashing up on the top here. It also does infrared, so I can do Windows Hello with Face ID. And I know it's not Face ID because it's an Apple thing, but it can look at your face using the camera and the IR and log you in. So lots of different ways to auth to it, which is really nice. In terms of spec, you know how you're always trying to figure out, like, where's that sweet spot of its law of diminishing returns as you spend more money for higher end CPUs, GPUs, RAM, you got to spend more money to get less, right? So where is the sweet spot? Now, caveat this by saying I went through and I configured it all, pretty much maxed it all out. I didn't want to get a touch screen. I don't feel like I need a touch screen. You just end up with fingerprints. But I did want a high DPI screen and a really high, what is it, nits or whatever the count is, so it's really light when I'm outside in the sunshine. So the other problem with this is, it's a first world problem, but I'm sitting on the beach trying to use this old P50 and it was very, very hard to see the screen. This one fixes it. So pretty much maxed it out and I left it in the cart. And again, this is like the mainstream consumer logon bits, left it all in the cart. And I thought, oh, I'll think about it for a little bit. And then got an email from a Lenovo Oompa Loompa who is obviously managing the carts and everything else. And managing the carts, doing the customer success or customer conversion, whatever it is. And they went, you know, hey, can we help you? Have you got any questions? I was like, well, I'm currently assessing whether or not I should get a Lenovo or a competitor. Can you help at all? Yeah, this is a big lesson. I never knew you could do this. Well, okay, I have never done this before. I'm sure I've heard of other people doing it. Anyway, they went away and they went, okay, well, give us your quote number or whatever it was from the cart. And they went away and they came back and they took everything that I had spec'd and then they chucked on a whole bunch of new bits and then it basically took off 20%, which was a lot of money for a high-end machine. So I got a lot more machine for a lot less money, which I'm really happy about. So I think that's the trick. Leave it sitting in the cart for a day or two and see if the Oompa Loompas get in touch with you and you get to bring the cost down. I'm going to talk about spec in a moment. Wayne says, did you look at Framework? I had never heard of Framework until people started asking me if I'd looked at Framework. No, I didn't. And no, I wouldn't because I would like the Lenovo's. that's it. Stefan says, took ages to get in. YouTube decided the stream was for mature audiences and wouldn't let me in. Well, Scott's here. Worked for him. Is it plagued by thermal throttling? Not that I've noticed so far. And I think, honestly, this is one of the things that the P1 suffered from because it was a smaller form factor. When you have these bigger form factors, I mean, you can see along the back, there's so many fans and things that fit in here. You can obviously get a lot more airflow through. There's a lot in the bottom too. It was a very similar deal with my P50, where it's like, look, there's a bunch of fans and so on the back. Full Ethernet jack, actually, on the P50. I got a dongle for the P16. Lots of fans on the sides, bottom, there was a lot of airflow through. Now, having said that, I've really not maxed this one out yet, and we'll talk about what I'll do with it later on. So spec, without getting too much into the weeds of the whole thing. i9, Intel, I wanted to go Intel rather than AMD. It's just always worked well for me. i9 at 4 gigahertz, P-cores up to 5.6 gigahertz, selected upgrade. I think they might have given me that upgrade. Obviously running Win 11 Pro. RAM, I maxed out 128 gig of RAM in a laptop. How cool is that? So that's well set up. I did not RAID configure. I do not need RAID for this laptop. Everything is cloud backed up. We're fine. I have a 2 terabyte primary SSD NVMe drive in it. I was going to go and buy a second one aftermarket because the Lenovo prices are really high. Part of the deal the Oompa Loompa gave me is that they chucked in a second drive. So now I've got two terabyte SSDs, which is great because a lot of what I'm doing is data breach processing. A lot of the time it's large stuff. A lot of the time I'm just sitting on a whole bunch of things I need to get around to processing. So the things that are sort of sitting in my queue, I can sync onto this laptop and I've always got handy because I've got the capacity, which is great. So Two solid-state NVMe's there for 4 TB in total, which is good. 16-inch display. So it is a larger display than what I had on the P50. That was a 15. Part of the reason it's larger is the bezels. So that the machine itself is not, it's not fundamentally different in terms of size compared to the old one. If I kind of line up the top left, you can just see from the bottom there. Where are we? The new one is a little bit longer that way. It's actually a little bit shorter the other way. And if we have a look at the bezels, I mean, this is where things sort of start to change. The bezels on the old P50, let's call it a finger width. About a finger width on the bezels. So there's obviously a lot of space between the physical edge of the machine and the edge of the screen. The bezels on the new one, I think we're going to call about a half finger width. It is definitely quite a bit smaller there. So it's just making better use of the real estate. And of course, the same thing's been happening with Apple things and iPhones and all the rest of it for ages. So great big screen, 3840 by 2400 IPS anti-glare. This is the Troy's on the beach spec, which is good. Non-touch. Well, that was good. Factory color calibration. It's got an NVIDIA RTX 2000 in it. The GPU was something I didn't overly spec. It's probably the least spec'd thing. I'm not doing hash cracking or things like that. If I really wanted to do that, I'd do it on the desktop here. I don't need that capability on the laptop. And GPUs add price like crazy, so fast. The camera is unnoteworthy at 1080p, but it has the IR, which allows us to do the Windows Hello bit. No pen because no touch. And then obviously all the other usual stuff. It's got Wi-Fi 6. It's actually kind of cool. So it's the first time I've had a Wi-Fi 6 enabled Windows machine, and I've got a Wi-Fi 6 ubiquity access point somewhere in here, and it popped up the other day and went, hey, it's like Wi-Fi 6 all the way. Congratulations. Thanks, Windows. Fingerprint reader built in, backlit keyboard. I actually didn't know it was going to be gray, if I'm honest. And if I could choose, I wouldn't have been gray. I would have been black. But once I besticker this, won't matter too much anyway. Nothing else of too particular interest in here. I got the 230 watt charger. That was like a $30 upgrade. They are a big chunky charging unit. In fact, I've got one on my desk here, and this isn't the big one. This is a 170 watt. I've got a bunch of chargers because I've had a bunch of Lenovos, and Charlotte's got one, and our chargers can exchange dongles. Sounded dirtier than what I meant it to be, but you know what I mean. It's handy when you're traveling. And they upped the warranty too, because it had default 1 year warranty, and then I think they added another couple of years as part of the Oompa Loompa upgrade. Alright. Just notice Scott's offended, which is fine. what else is in here? What about crypto? Not about it. Joe says, my current XPS 15 is always running its fans and throttling. Not a fan of it, no pun intended. Yeah, it's like that's annoying, right? Like you don't want that. I did hear these fans fire up as I picked the machine up just before. So I think it just came out of sleep state and I was like, ooh, let's cool down. Now, people said some stupid stuff. So it's Chinese. We're going with this. It just seems like every time you have something like a laptop, and I know this because every time I've had a Lenovo and I share it, inevitably one of the comments I get is, aren't you worried about China spying on you? And what about Superfish? And Superfish was Lenovo's extraordinarily poorly thought out MITM implementation to inject ads and other crap and capture analytics and things like that, which I still to this day believe were not malicious in intent, but were very poorly thought out, but could be construed as malicious in intent because they can MITM your traffic. And this must have been back in about 2015 as well. Where long ago was Superfish? Richard would know this off the top of his head. It was ages ago. Superfish Lenovo. Superfish was an advertising company that developed various advertising-supported software products based on visual search engine. But where's the Lenovo bit? It's in the Wikipedia ad here. Wikipedia ad. Wikipedia article. The software was bundled with various applications as early as 2010. Lenovo began to bundle the software, some of its computers, in September 2014. So now we get down to the Lenovo security incident. Users had expressed concerns about scans of SSL encrypted web traffic by Superfish visual search software pre-installed on Lenovo machines since at least early December 2014. Criticisms of Superfish software predated the Lenovo incident and were not limited to Lenovo user community. It was a bad look. It was stupid and it was poorly thought out. And I think, and Scott would remember all this very well because he's the TLS guy, but it was sort of a time where we're really trying to push as much encryption on the wire as possible. And then Lenovo's like, here, hold my beer and just like watch this MITM all of your traffic so that we can inject ads and things. It was dumb, dumb, dumb and stupid. But it's like that old saying, don't attribute to malice what can adequately be explained by incompetence. I'm quite sure about that. And look, it's the sort of thing these days, there's so many people looking at this stuff. Number one, they're going to find it if you do that stuff. And number two, we're going to get a really good idea about whether it was being used maliciously or not, or just stupidly. The point is, all of this was like 8 years ago. It was so long ago, they got absolutely spanked for it. We have moved on. And if not Lenovo, which other brand? Because so many of them are either Chinese owned or made in China. Most of my eye things around me are made in China. I imagine there's a lot of controls given it's still a US company. But it is obviously a Chinese company. But you can't just like chuck something out because you don't like the country of origin when pretty much everything that we use electronically has at least components that come from that country. So this was kind of nuts. So Scott says, came out in 2015, was ongoing before that. It was also right after Snowden. Worst time to F*CK with encryption. Yeah, exactly, right? Like it was a bad time and a bad look. It was 8 years ago. Get over it. Move on. All right. What else were people wrong about? Couple of other things. So someone here mentioned Framework. So Wayne looked at Framework. Now, I had not heard of Framework before, and I only had a brief look at it. Framework laptops. Framework, frame.work. Upgradable graphics, fully customizable input, thin, powerful notebook. There's a lot of reasons that I didn't look at any other. I could have gone and looked at a Dell or, you know, an HP or whatever else is popular at the moment. But there's loads of reasons why I stuck with Lenovo. And honestly, one of them is, again, other than the superficial thing, my experience with the machines has only been positive. Also, other than that insiders thing where they wanted me to be censored. Anyway, other than that, the experience is very positive with the hardware itself. They used to bundle a lot of bloatware and other crap with it. I have not seen any evidence of that on this machine. If I'm honest, I haven't even looked, but I haven't had like McAfee popping up asking me to buy a subscription or any of that other crap. The only thing that I have noticed, caveating that because I haven't gone through and delved right into it, noticed was pre-installed, was Lenovo tools to take things like driver updates and BIOS updates, which is fine because I want those things updated. So my history with them has been really good. And again, that P50, getting 7 years out of that P50, running almost 24/7 for 7 years. This one I never even put in sleep mode. Like I just like locked the machine, closed the lid, and it has barely stopped. And it's been rock solid. Being able to go between different machines with the same charger. You know, Charlotte's got one now. Ari, our 14-year-old son, needed another laptop recently. I got him a very entry-level ThinkPad. It was less than $1,000 Australian, so think about $600. And that's been a great machine. And that even has, if we're just going to call it Face ID, infrared logon with Windows Hello. And it uses the same power adapters. We can exchange all that stuff. And when I go from that keyboard to this keyboard to his keyboard to Charlotte's keyboard, all the keyboards are the same and the mental sort of muscle memory just works. So maybe the frameworks are great. I don't know. But I don't have the experience and I can't just interchange with everything else. Brennan says, I actually seriously considered picking up a framework when my tax return arrived, but then I ended up with a MacBook. So for folks mentioning framework, I'm curious, why are they now popping up so much? Like, what is it? Is it just the customizability, or, you know, why did so many people go, didn't you get a framework? And why didn't I know about framework before? I don't know. Bezos' anti-bullying army says, Lenovo CEO took a $3 million pay hit and gave his 10,000 employees $350 bonuses. That guy's awesome. Okay, well, good for Lenovo employees, I guess. Stephen says, the first thing I do with any laptop is do a fresh Windows install from a USB. Can't be bothered removing all the built-in apps that all run on startup. And look, I mean, I've done many fresh installs over the years, but I'm busy too. You know, I kind of want a good reason to do it. And I just don't have a sufficiently high level of suspicion that Lenovo's doing dodgy stuff still that I need to rebuild the whole thing. Bezos again says, Linus Tech Tips recommended framework, thus why they are popular now. Andrew says it's the repairability and reproduction and reduction rather of e-waste. Brendan says customization and repairability. Okay, yep. Marek, the ability to upgrade pretty much all within the chassis. All right, that's positive. Andrew, EG, can swap out the main board when new ones come out. Muhammad says a MacBook Pro or P16 Gen 2, and why, please? Right, maybe you missed the early bit where I explained why this machine. Play that back later. All right, a couple of other things that I think were interesting. Now, I have had a blog post in draft for about 6 or 7 years, which I haven't finished, about this particular thing that came up. A bunch of people were like, why don't you just get a really basic machine and then you do everything either on the cloud or remoted into my home machine? And there's lots of reasons. And one of the reasons that first came to mind, and when I was in fact going to start writing about this, and I think actually I had that P50 on my lap. I was in a car in Scotland with David Christensen, who I know Richard knows, driving to Speyside to go and drink whiskey for a couple of days. And he was driving and I was sitting there. We had no signal. We were out in the middle of nowhere. And I was doing work. I was doing work with no signal. And very often I'm doing work with no signal. Not so much driving to space or to drink whiskey, but I'll be on a plane. And I want to be able to be productive on a plane. I want to have my data. I want to have everything close by. I don't want to have latency. And I don't want to be dependent on a cloud. I don't want to have to spin stuff up and spin stuff down. I don't want to have to store all the stuff there. You can never reproduce that same first-hand experience as doing stuff on the metal on your own machine as opposed to remoting into something in a different location. And that, I think, that's worth paying money for. Like, that's worth paying, let's say it's a few grand extra for a really high-end machine that if I can use, even if I can use it for 5 years, let alone 7 like that one, that is a fantastic ROI. Merrick says you can use the motherboard as a standalone PC. okay, this is obviously framework stuff. Brennan says on the mainboard swap front, framework has even worked out, I think, Color Master to come out with a desktop case. You can put the most, you can for the most part just plop the outgoing board into. Okay. I'm getting a sense of like a lot of reason. This seems to be our people, you know, like our sort of mindset, which is cool. I should read a little bit more about later on, not because I'm going to get one, but they're nice sentiments. Still wouldn't have changed my mind. But yeah, you can't sort of just pop up one day with something new and replace decades worth of trust, I guess. Okay, on to something else. Have I been paying subscriptions and credit cards? Now, I was chatting to Scott about this during the week as well. We have this beautiful model for subscriptions on Have I Been Pwned, where you say that you want a subscription either because you're going to be doing API queries for email addresses, or you're going to be doing domain searches on big domains, and maybe you want to hit those on an API as well. And you go onto the website and you buy a subscription with a credit card, and it happens near instantaneously. In the time I've taken to explain this, you could have done that. The whole thing, everything from identifying yourself, entering your details, buying the subscription, and then you don't touch it for like another year because you bought an annual subscription. And it's beautiful and it's so easy. And the data goes into Stripe. And Stripe has all of the customers and it has all of the payments. It will collect the tax if you're in an area where we need to collect tax from. That's another absolute nightmare, but yes, we have to collect tax if you're in Europe, but you're not a company as a whole. I don't understand a lot of it. Charlotte does that bit. But Stripe takes care of all that. It takes care of all the fraud detection. It takes care of things like if we give anyone a discount, if you're like an EDU, for example. It takes care of a whole bunch of mechanical things that I would otherwise have to build. It's not just accepting money. And I think this is one of the things that people didn't understand. So let me get into the actual tweet about this, because it's just bugging the hell out of me. And then a couple of things happened yesterday that bugged me even more about it. And you'll understand what I mean in a moment. Where was Stripe? It's down here. Okay. Nope, that was something else. I'll just search for my name in Stripe. Mm-hmm. Basically, while I'm looking for it, I was lamenting the fact that many companies, now when I say many as well, I am talking about what is almost certainly a single digit percentage of our subscribers, a small single digit percentage, don't want to pay with a card. So my tweet here says, we often receive comments to the effect of, We want to purchase a Have I Been Pwned subscription, but our company doesn't allow us to use a credit card. And I've said, what is the financial reason behind this? This is a very small portion compared to those that do pay by card, but why is this? Now, I've gone on just to sort of show that I'm not completely stupid here. To add to this, having spent 14 years at Pfizer, I'd see policies like this all the time. But it's also not like there was a blanket ban. Try going on a business trip and asking the person at the noodle shop you're having lunch at to raise an invoice on 60-day terms. So we're often getting this feedback. This is probably one of the most predominant things that actually comes through the ticketing system. And for the most part, like, this whole thing is so automated, it's beautiful. Like, whether we have 10 people or 10,000 people a day come and purchase a subscription, everything just works. And it's only when people start logging tickets that it actually consumes our time. And the number one thing we get tickets about is this. And we're constantly getting this request. Do you accept? What we get is either, do you accept payment via wire transfer, or can you invoice us instead? And I'm kind of like, well, when you buy, you get an invoice and you get a receipt. It generates both the things. Or the other one I love, can you give us a quote? Why? Well, we want to see how much it is. Well, it's on the page. It tells you how much. We want to see our company name on it. Why? So it's like, no matter what your name is, it's the same price. I don't know. There's all these formal procurement and financial and bureaucracy things. But the credit card thing comes up a lot. Now, what just really frustrates me with this is that clearly there are mechanisms for the vast bulk of organizations to go and put in a card and buy the service. And again, like, we're literally going through running the numbers at the moment and thinking, is it even worth it? Is it even worth spending the time? Because it's one of those things where it's like 5%, for argument's sake, of the customers are causing 95% of the overhead. So do we cut the 5%? And we haven't done that. And I'd honestly feel very, very bad if I did, because that's going to be a whole bunch of people you're saying, well, you just can't do domain searches. And that's not what we want. I don't want to take anything away from people. So the problem that we have is that we're an Australian organization with a presence on Stripe. We cannot accept payments to a bank account. Now, if we're a US organization, they have virtual bank accounts for Stripe. So if we're a US company with a US instance of Stripe, we could invoice and we could have payments into this virtual bank account. You get a unique number for each invoice. The money goes in there. Stripe does the reconciliation, raises the event, calls the webhook, updates the subscription. It'd be beautiful. You cannot do that for a non-US company. Now, I am trying to get in touch with more people at Stripe and just hammer home a solution to this, because I just find it ridiculous. But every time we come up against this, and Scott and I spent a bunch of time talking about this too, because he accepts Stripe's payments on Report URI, we have this same problem. And then people go, well, why don't you just invoice and then give them like your Australian bank details, and then you'll have a SWIFT code and everything, and then you pay into the Australian bank and it's job done. Well, it's not, for multiple reasons. Number one is that we need to then do manual reconciliation. So we're going to see possibly $3.95 US come into that account. We've got to figure out who sent it. And a lot of the time it's hard to figure that out, even with large sums of money. And then we've got to manually reconcile it. But what are we reconciling it with? Like, if we go through all our financial accounting system, well, we didn't raise an invoice there because we want to raise the invoice in Stripe. Why do we want to raise that in Stripe? Because we want the customer to be in Stripe, because it calls all the webhooks into Have I Been Pwned. And it does all the tax collection and it does all the tax reporting, so at the end of each quarter we can pay our Aussie tax and we can pay our VATOS tax in the EU and the other countries we're probably going to have to collect for in the future. So the Stripe ecosystem is about a lot more than just payment. And in just the same way as just providing an Aussie bank account doesn't work, we can't do what a lot of people suggested, which is just let them pay by crypto. So, okay, fine. You pay by crypto, then what? How do we reconcile? How do we create the customer? You're literally getting to the point where you're saying, well, we have to take all of the customer management and subscription management stuff that's in Stripe, abstract it away from Stripe, and then have Stripe as a payment provider, and then crypto as a payment provider, and then bank details as a payment provider. And it's just messy, 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 messy. And it's absolutely painful. It's got saying here, yay Vatos. So for those of you not familiar with this term, as I wasn't until Scott said we need to do it, we're an Australian company. We're here. It's an Australian proprietary limited legally registered company. We have to charge GST, our goods and services tax, to Australian customers. Stripe helps do that because you put your address in and it's like, hey, you're in Australia. You know, you've got to pay another 10%. But for reasons that I still don't fully understand, we also have to collect tax in the EU. But then I think not if you're a company and you're registered for VATOS, but and we have to report quarterly back to somewhere in Ireland about the tax we've collected in Ireland. And we may have to do that in other places as well. And it's nuts. Anyway, it's a slightly separate issue, but the point is it's nuts, but Stripe helps make it a lot easier. So really what I want to see here is I want to see Stripe supporting this for an Australian entity. Now there is a service called Stripe Atlas, where they help you set up a US company. And they say, look, it's for startups and all this sort of thing, which I don't think we quite fit the criteria for anymore anyway. But I don't want another freaking company and another set of tax returns, another set of legal obligations and all the other shit that goes with it. I do not want to go down that path for, let's call it 5% of subscribers who frankly are just being difficult a lot of the time. And this is what kind of bugs me. As we sort of went through this discussion, a whole bunch of people are like, you know, someone in the Netherlands like, oh, in the Netherlands, no one uses credit card. I was like, mate, I was just there. I bought so much beer on credit card. I bought chips smothered in mayonnaise with credit card. I bought those little pancakes, the poffertjes, with credit card from the little stalls at the market, the mobile one. Like, yes. And then he's like, well, you can't do it at like Albert Heijn, the supermarket chain. And then someone else said, well, actually, now they're rolling it out, you can. And a lot of the arguments people gave were things like, well, look, our company doesn't let us do this. And I'm like, well, mate, what if you travel? And to use the noodle shop example, you travel, you've gone to, let's say it's Singapore, a very modern Southeast Asia country, and you want to buy some noodles from a hawker center. How do you pay for it? Well, I'll tell you what, you're not raising an invoice. I know that much. You're not giving like Mr. Chow at the noodle shop. So it sounded much more inappropriate than what I meant, but you get my idea, right? You're not raising an invoice and giving it to the guy and going, please, can I have my noodles now? And we'll get back to you in 60 days for your $5 or whatever it was. You're either whacking down the credit card or you're whacking down cash. Now, if it's cash, it's usually your own cash, and then you have to go through and fill out reimbursement forms and everything, which is miserable, but that's what happens. And then you get someone say, well, look, in Germany, like, are we legally not allowed to do that? And then I go through and I look at our Stripe customers and go, oh, wow, there's a lot of German customers in there that have paid by credit card. Someone else will say, we're a government department, we can't do that. Look at Stripe, a lot of government departments in there. So I wonder of that 5%, if push came to shove and it was like, you have no choice, whether that would then come down to 2.5%, for argument's sake. Often what we've done is we've said, okay, well, you can go to a reseller. And then the reseller, Scott, just leave a comment in here. How do you feel about resellers? You can go to a reseller and then you can pay the reseller money and then the reseller can buy by credit card. And we have resellers that often do this and they're happy doing the credit card thing. But then resellers got to make money too. So resellers charge a markup. Scott says, don't get me started on resellers. I would read to you the discussions that Scott and I have about resellers, but I'd have to censor so many of the words that there'd really be no content left. And you sort of look and go, why do you want to have resellers? And I know for Pfizer, we had a reseller. It was always SHI, Software House International. And if I was like 10-year younger Troy, and I was wanting to go and buy Have I Been Pwned, my procurement department would say, could you go to SHI and ask them to buy it? And I was like, it's on the website right there, and it's only $3.95. So I could just put the card in. Like, no, please spend some time to go to the reseller, and then they will mark it up. And I don't even know how much they mark it up for. I know that we just charge the same amount regardless, and that's it. James says, maybe X can take over for Stripe. I hear he wants a payment company again. Man, yeah, fine. Like, whatever, just make it easy on me. And I'm sympathetic to the people who are the 10-year younger me who are in these organizations who are having to deal with the bureaucracy and the bullshit, and all they want to do is pay their $3.95 and query their domain. Like, it's just, it is nuts. My hope is, I think the path of least resistance will be to get better support or any support from Stripe around the bank account situation. But we can't simultaneously try and run on a shoestring with really just two people doing this. It's not even full time, and then have all of this overhead of processing micropayments because of stupid procurement rules, which most companies get around anyway. I feel better about that, even though no one gave me a decent suggestion about how to get out of it. I will hopefully find a Stripe person. If a Stripe person is listening to this, please get in touch, because I feel like we need someone in Australia to talk to, because I'm sure there's a whole bunch of stuff that, because I'm sort of sitting here going, Stripe, I'd like to put more business through you, and you make money every time someone makes a transaction. So help us help you, you know, the whole thing. Anyway, let's go on to something more fun. CoinHive. CoinHive is the gift that keeps on giving. If you remember, CoinHive was, that was the model where, you know how people don't like ads on websites because they embed all of this crap and they have trackers and privacy invasion stuff, and every now and then there's like malware in them and other nasty things. People don't like ads on websites. So what you do as the responsible website operator who needs to monetize your traffic is you put a crypto miner via JavaScript on the website. And then when people come to your website, their browser mines, I think it was a bit of Monero coin from memory, by embedding CoinHive in there. And then all you have to do is embed it in there. You put in a token, which has got a great degree of anonymity around it because crypto, and you get a little bit of money from each one of your visitors. Now, of course, as soon as there's a way of monetizing anyone who loads your script and then sending it to an anonymous account, even just starting to explain it, you're like, oh yeah, I can see where this is going. Every man and his dog who could get script to run on another website would put CoinHive on there. And this is another one Scott and I have spent a lot of time on, because we've seen the things like Browse Aloud, where CoinHive got embedded into a whole bunch of government websites because of a compromised third-party plugin. So CoinHive was kind of always a shitty model to convert your customers' power into money for you. And then it became even shittier because everyone who was doing illegal stuff and putting script on other people's websites was doing that. So through a series of fortuitous events, which I still don't fully understand myself, someone ended up giving me the CoinHive domain after they'd shut down. And it was embedded in so many different places. And then once I owned the CoinHive domain, it's like, okay, so I can now choose which script I want to run in the browser of people who see CoinHive embedded in a website. And when we talk about malicious parties embedding it, they weren't just embedding it in websites, but they're things like compromised MikroTik routers. All of these routers were getting compromised and having CoinHive injected into the traffic. Now, of course, it can only do that on traffic that's not TLS because the router sits in the middle of the connection. But still a lot of websites that aren't TLS. Even today, Bureau of Meteorology, for some reason, kept popping up in my tweet feed this week. Australia's Bureau of Meteorology still refuses to serve over TLS, which is just nuts. So CoinHive's getting embedded everywhere. And what ends up happening is I decide I'm just going to do a little pop-up message. I control the JavaScript. I could do a gazillion different nasty things when I control the JavaScript. I will just put a message here. And the message says, this website attempted to run a crypto miner in your browser. Click here for more information. And it was a model and you could dismiss it. And I thought, well, that will fix it, right? Like, website operators will have their customers, or they'll go to the website themselves and see it and they'll go, okay, well, I'm going to take out the crypto miner. Wasn't fixing it. So I started, I removed the ability to dismiss the model and I gave it a little timeout in JavaScript, and then it's automatically redirected to my blog post about it. And it's been like that for years. And then, was this just yesterday? Yesterday, I think, I get this email. Excuse me. This is too good. I've got to be able to read it properly. It was It was one of these ones where I woke up, first thing, bleary-eyed, half coffee in, and I've just seen this, and I just started laughing. So the subject of this email says, you are being redirected illegally through our site. And then the email says, Mr/Ms, our site, www.obfuscated, I've obfuscated out, is directed to your site by official, and then it line wraps halfway through the sentence. Official institutions when a search is made in the Google browser. And then it has the URL here about my blog post. I now own the CoinHive domain. Here's how I'm fighting cryptojacking, doing good things with content security policies. Right, so they've linked to that. And then they say, prevents our visitors from visiting our site by redirecting to the line wrap page, line wrap. Microsoft Edge browser, I'm not going to read all the line wraps, just know that every sort of 6 or 7 words it line wraps. Microsoft Edge browser protects our site by constantly blocking the CoinHive watchdog. Watchdog? Google does not implement this protection. We transferred the problem to our technical team. Our visitors are complaining that the problem is that a Trojan virus continues to infect our site, even though it has been removed. And as a result, it, LineRap, constantly redirects our visitors to your site through our site. Since you are the relevant website, we wanted to inform you about the solution to this situation. Now, look, I get this is obviously not an English first language thing. I'm sympathetic of that, but this is just so wrong in so many ways. I'm nearly there. We requested the necessary technical studies from official and other expert organizations. Please ask your technical teams to review the situation. In this way, we expect you to request that they ensure that redirects are not directed to you due to viruses. This is necessary in order not to damage our site. Apparently it's damaging the site. But it's kind of funny, right? Because it's, and again, non-English first language, obviously non-technical, gotten information from other people, it's just like completely wrong in every way. And then I've just put a screen cap of what it looks like on their website. So I've gone there and say, yep, you are embedding my script on your website. So I went back to them and I haven't had a reply from them yet either. I said, as the link in your email explains, your website is embedding CoinHive. Either your website was compromised by someone else and it was embedded there by a malicious party, or someone responsible for your website added it in an attempt to monetize your traffic. Either way, the source code of your site clearly shows you're embedding the script and it's classic CoinHive embedded there in the source of the page. But I wasn't done. I said, to clarify some incorrect statements in your email, number one, traffic is not being illegally redirected. You're the one embedding the script in your site. Number two, this is not a Trojan virus. It merely redirects to the blog post, and this will be immediately clear to anyone technical who inspects the script. Number three, there are no viruses for the same reason as in the previous point. To summarize, if you don't want your traffic redirected due to embedding CoinHive, then stop embedding CoinHive. And then I haven't heard back from them. But I did start pulling stats because I was interested. It's like, how many people are still seeing this CoinHive message? And I went to Cloudflare and popped up their stats. 241,000 people in the previous 30 days have been to my CoinHive domain. That is nuts. It's like 250,000 people a month are seeing CoinHive. And then as I went through and looked at it more, I found one site in particular where there are 124,000 referrals from this site in just the last 4 weeks. And I think this was like pirated APKs for Android or something to that effect. But it's nuts that this still happens so much. If you have any better suggestions as to what I could do with this CoinHive domain, because clearly, like, I don't have stats going back far enough because all I get is like a month worth of Cloudflare data, but my gut feel is that this isn't going away. It's still there. So that's kind of nuts. All right. Now something else. And this ended up being a Scott thing too this week. We travel in similar circles. As some of you may be aware, there was an American holiday called Halloween. And we say it's an American holiday because it seems to have come from there. And for the most part in Australia, we never really cared about it. We're just like, Americans, being American. But it has somehow infiltrated Australian culture. And I think it has in other parts of the world too. And now Halloween is a thing. And kids constantly go around and door knock and ask for lollies. They're called lollies here. And there's an expectation on you to somehow partake in this in one way or another. Now, having a very heavily automated house, Scott says, same in the UK, we never really did it, and now it's big here. Right. When I was a kid, no one cared. Because I have a very heavily automated house, it did seem like there were options available to us that weren't there for everybody else. So I did two things. Number one, we had to figure out how to lure children into the house. This is what Halloween is, right? It's like, how do I get children to come to my house? So we made all the lights orange, lit up like Halloween. And then I went, look, I'll just do something with the doorbell. Now, I had been meaning to do this for quite some time because I've been using my doorbell to try and mess with either real estate agents or Bible bashers in equal parts. I feel that they're all in the same category of unsolicited door knockers. And I've been using text-to-speech with Home Assistant and my Unify G4 Pro doorbell to play audio. And what I've been doing is I've got an automation here which says, if Charlotte and I are out of the house, we're not home, it's going to play a text-to-speech which effectively says, hi, this is an artificially intelligent house. How may I help you? Pause, leaves them enough time to state their business, and then comes back and says, thank you, your message has been saved to my neural processing engine. Goodbye. And then they're just sort of left there. And it's constant record too, right, on the doorbell, so we can see all this. Yes, perfectly legal here in Australia to do that. And then we go back and we watch it and we have a good laugh. So a bunch of people said after I did this, they said, you should use Lenny Troll. Now, I had never heard of Lenny Troll before. And then I searched up and I found it. Now, I'm not going to post the video because it does have kids in it. But I will play the start of the audio of one of these. I sent Scott the full thing the other day. Next minute, he's doing the same thing in his house. Well, similar. So this gives you an idea of what it sounds like. I won't play the whole thing because it's only 2 minutes. There's kids coming to the door.
Baby house.
Now, these are all separate audio files with pauses between them. Anyway, it's hilarious to see the reaction on the kids' faces when there's this Lenny Troll is like, which company are you calling from? Now, also, these kids were super cute and they were very, very nice about it. And I actually felt a bit bad about not giving them any lollies at the end of it. But it gets to the end, and this one girl who was actively engaging in conversation with Lenny eventually says, I think you're going to kidnap us. Goodbye. And then she just runs away. So that was fun. And I'm very tempted to leave Lenny Troll there a little bit more permanently when Charlotte and I are away. If you can think of any particular way of identifying, especially real estate agents via Home Assistant, I would love to know because I want to give them a little bit of Lenny. James says, I grab the name of the domain referring the traffic and pop up a suggestion. They email sales or support at that domain, which of course would be the CoinHive thing. Scott, how do you play them? Did you upload them to the doorbell like I did for mine? No, so mate, I feel like you did it the hard way because I put it all through Home Assistant. So Home Assistant can play to the G4 doorbell. It's a media player, and then you can play those media files to the doorbell. And I'll give you the entire automation after this, if you like. And I'll give you the audio files too, because I cleaned some of them up. They're a little bit too quiet, and then some of them were louder than the others. So I've got all that good to go. James, we used to send telemarketers to a service like that. It'd keep them on the line. When they were talking to a bot, they weren't harassing people. Yeah. And this is what Lenny Troll's meant to be there for. So if you have a telemarketer there on the line or you have a scammer, I've got to have the control panel. It's like a Lenny control panel where you just click on the audio that you want. And if I could be here with my phone, like sitting on the desk, playing the Lenny Troll, we'd be golden. Stefan, doorbell shows up. Media player, exactly. Scott says, yeah, mine is just to replace the audio file on the actual doorbell. Brendan, can the G4 doorbell do old SIP? It would be kind of neat, assuming I own my dang home, to be able to make it call my desk phone. Not as far as I know, but you could automate all that through Home Assistant. So this is kind of the nice thing. It's like, if you have the Unify integration, then you can catch events such as doorbell ring. And of course, that can then trigger an automation, which can then, we play a ding dong in the house. So the Sonos speakers, which we have in every room, goes off and plays a ding dong. But of course, we can also play back through the speaker in the doorbell. I'll send you the automation right after this, mate. All right, last thing. Speaking of house, I shared photos a couple of days ago about the kitchen. So I've been sharing renovation photos this year, most predominantly of the garage and the kitchen. And I did crowdsource a lot of content from people. I said, look, we're going to rebuild the garage, thinking something like this. What do you guys think? Have you got any good examples? And I did have some good ideas. The kitchen in particular, we had a lot of good ideas on. And I put them in the tweet thread, and I put some photos and some explanations. The two big things that came to mind that have just been epic, and the kitchen is now done. I will talk about how I made the tradie cry, but I'll talk about this. I'm going to leave the crying tradie thing till the end of it. He deserved it. Scott, I'll tell you something else later. I've got to send you some video. So one of the suggestions was have two dishwashers. Now, when I first saw this, I went, that sounds really excessive. Why do you need two dishwashers? Like, that is very, very excessive. But multiple people were like, we got two dishwashers. It's awesome. You should get two dishwashers. And it is fantastic. And the main reason, well, there's many reasons. But first of all, you have enough people around, you'll fill a dishwasher. A lot harder to fill two dishwashers. That's twice as hard. But the big thing is, from like a normal operational family using the kitchen sort of perspective, is as soon as one fills, you can set it going. And instead of like then piling up all the things that are waiting for the other dishwasher, you can put them in the empty one. And you often have like one running and one filling. And it just keeps the place so much cleaner. You'll see in the pictures, everything looks spotless. That is genuinely the way we usually have it. It is spotless. I wouldn't normally watch this, but I was watching the David Beckham documentary the other day. Really not interested in soccer, but it got good ratings. And he's a little bit obsessive in the same way, where he's like, look, I just have to make sure everything's spotless afterwards. And you sort of go, oh, okay, he's an interesting character. and seemed genuinely nice too, I might add. But we were watching that, I was like, yeah, like that's like us. We just like to have the place clean. It just, there's something about it that just feels like you've got your shit in order when everything is away and clean. And the two dishwashers makes a really, really big difference there. So there's that. The other thing was, we wanted to take the cooktop. It's an induction cooktop. We do not have mains gas anywhere in this area. You have to have an electric cooktop. And there's a whole bunch of other stuff gaining momentum about all the health issues of having gas. So it was going to be an induction cooktop, just like the old one. The old one was against a cupboard on the wall. And really, our kitchen's pretty simple. It's a wall like this, and there's an island bench. It was on the wall, but of course, in order to cook, you've got to have space above it so you can put your pots and things like that. So you end up with a piece out of the wall like this, and then you've got to have an extractor fan above that, so then your cupboard space and everything's severely limited, and you end up taking out a very large amount of space in order to put a cooktop on the wall, or on the cupboards on the wall. So we wanted to put one on the island bench, because on the island bench, you're not going to have anything above it anyway, because it's a bench top. You've got to be able to see across it. But then how do you do extraction? And a bunch of people said, well, look, you can get cooktops now that have built-in extractors. And some of them have little things that pop up. Others have little circles and things in the middle. And yes, they're beneath the height of the steam, but if they create enough suction and the steam and stuff comes up, it will get sucked down in the middle. And a bunch of people, mostly Europeans, said, look at Bora, which is a German brand. And I'd never heard of Bora before. Started looking at it and found that they have a model called the Bora Professional 3. And I saw the price and thought, this is ridiculous. So we had to get one. But I'll caveat this. It is a Beautiful, beautiful looking cooktop. It's like a, it's got sort of four logical areas, and in the middle, there's a long extraction point. Let's call it an extraction point. And it's got a little cover that folds down like this, and it starts to suck air through there. Now, I've put videos of this and photos of this in the tweet thread. It genuinely works really well. So, particularly cooking steak in a pan where the pan's only about yay big next to it, and it's a low pan, and that extractor on full, and it pulls it down into the island bench through several filters, and then down to the bottom where there's a little vent which faces towards the door. It does not work as well as having a, like a range hood over the top of it, and then physics means the steam and everything goes up and it goes straight into there. It doesn't work as well as that. It doesn't work as well when you have a pot that's higher that might be boiling water, and then you've got to get the steam from that higher point down, but also it's just steam from boiling water. You know, I'm more worried about things you cook in pan that do make a lot of smoke that you don't want filling the house. Works extraordinarily well for what it is, looks epic. One of the things that I have always hated with induction tops is these sort of the areas where you touch on the top itself to turn things on or off or change temperature, because a lot of it is like implied knowledge where it's not clear what do I push. How do I change it? How do I remember we got to an Airbnb in Oslo, I think this was in December, and I literally couldn't work out like how to cook an egg. I just couldn't figure out how to turn the stove on. I went like going to Google trying to look stuff up. This one has got five like knurled aluminium knobs on the front of it. And they're like a proper metal and they feel nice and they're all in black, which looks epic. And you turn them and the heat goes up or down. It's like it's super, super, super intelligent. So that's really, really awesome. What's not as awesome is that every one of those knobs has got a little screen in the middle that tells you if you're on a one or two or three. And the reason there's five, by the way, is you've got your four cooking areas and the one in the middle is for the instructor. What's not as obvious is that each one that has the screen that shows the temperature that you're currently on, you know, one through nine, is also touch screen, which is good, except I haven't worked out how to use it yet and I haven't been able to make the time. And very often we end up accidentally putting the chilled lock on and suddenly we can't change the temperature. Or the extractor gets left open and we can't figure out how to close it. So there is implied knowledge. So I've got to sit down, I've got to figure out how to learn the whole thing, and I've got to figure out how to make it all work. And that's my big problem, but it is otherwise beautiful. Now I'm going to go on, but let me look at the comments here. Scott Dang, Hack Five Pineapples, Stefan, do the filters just go in the dishwasher? There are three parts that can go in the dishwasher. So if you look at the photos, mate, when the extractor's closed, there's like a lid on the top. It's like an arm that closes like this. That can go in the dishwasher. Underneath that, there is a filter that catches anything that falls in. So, you know, if you're wiping the bench top and crumbs and stuff fall in, that goes in the dishwasher. Underneath that is another, it's another like it's a little brace, and they're all sort of long plastic things. Let's call them 40 centimeters long. That goes in the dishwasher. Further down beneath that, where things get sucked around a pipe, there are big filters that almost look like big pool filters or hot tub filters. They don't go in the dishwasher. I'm not sure what their life cycle is. I'm not sure when you end up changing them. But all of the stuff that gets the dirtiest goes in the dishwasher, either of the dishwashers, which is really cool. Okay, the rest about this is messing with real estate agents, which I'm very supportive of, but it's a separate topic. So, other things here. What else was noteworthy in the kitchen? We did the bench top in sort of two parts. So, you can only get stone so big, and they come in, let's call it for argument's sake, 2 meter lengths. And if your bench is longer than 2 meters and you want to have the same stone, then you end up with a join. And this was what happened on our old bench. We had a great big join in the middle, which wasn't terrible, but you could always see it. So this one, we end up doing like one higher bench top area where you'll see if you look at the pictures, it's got a really kind of marbly looking finish to it, and a lower bench top area, which is a more constant finish. But what's kind of cool is on the higher one, so that by having two sort of different stones and different heights, you never need one really, really big piece of stone anyway. So the join doesn't matter. They're very clearly different parts. But the higher one, when that gets messy, you can wipe everything into the sink. The lower one, when that gets messy, you can wipe everything into a pull-out bin. So again, this sort of thing about how do we actually keep stuff clean is just way, 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 way better with this design. I'm jumping around a bit. Let's look at the photos. All of the appliances we got in there are Miele appliances that join the Miele app, which has an integration to Home Assistant. So everything from both the dishwashers, the warming drawer, the conventional oven, the steam oven, the microwave oven, six different things, six more IP addresses in the house, all plugged in the Home Assistant, can all raise events like speaking through the Sonos and on the watch when the dishwasher finishes. So you can go and obviously empty it, which is pretty cool. Now, there was one constant piece of feedback I want to touch on before we finish. People were like, this includes you, Scott, why the hell do you have a Christmas tree up in October? Now, there are multiple problems with this. Number one, it's not October. I literally posted this in November. And there is a whole school of thought about when is the appropriate time to put your Christmas tree up. And I feel like this is one of these things which is very different depending on your family, your culture, where you are in the world, if you even have a Christmas tree. But for a reason, I can't remember why, a few years ago, I was like Googling, when is the right time to put your Christmas tree up? And there's a bunch of people who say 1st of November is okay. You know, there's no Christmas tree, please, but you know, whatever. So it is November, right? Now we're well into November, but it was definitely November when this went up. Now, number two, often we travel a lot. So for example, last year we went away at, must have been about the 25th or 26th of November, and then we came back on Boxing Day. So if we actually want to be able to be around and enjoy the Christmas tree, it's got to go up early. We also have the kids here half the time. So if we put it up on the 1st of November, just due to the way holidays and travel and everything work out, they're going to see the Christmas tree for about 2 weeks. And I didn't put that in the thread because it feels a little bit sad. We're not sad. We're going to have an awesome holiday in Europe with you as well, Scott, with the kids throughout the remainder of December and all of January. It's going to be epic. But we literally have about 2 weeks between now and Christmas where they're going to see the Christmas tree. So I want to put that up. Thirdly, are we up to three? I married a Norwegian and they lose their shit over Christmas. We have got so much Christmas stuff everywhere in this house already because they love it. She loves it. She really enjoys it. It looks cool. People walk in like, ah, oh, that's really nice. And that's like, it's a nice thing to be excited about. So for you, all you Scrooges out there who are shitty because we put the Christmas tree up, number one, it's fine. Number two, you're missing the point. It's about the bloody kitchen. All right. Stefan, we have a strict rule in my house. No Christmas songs until December 1. Okay. That's also not something that's worked out real well here, but regardless. Christmas tree even later. Jay says, my brother once took his Christmas tree down in October to put up Halloween decorations for a haunted house. There's lots of levels of issues with that there, I think, James. All right, folks, I'm going to wrap it up there. I need to go and it's going to be pulled pork on the smoker, which has to go on now because it's past 9 a.m. and we want to have it for dinner. It's going to be epic, Scott. But you wear out the excitement if you do it too early, not if you stay excited long enough. On that note, see you later.